All right, the topic of this workshop is Lost Dreams Awaken, and our speaker is Ms. Mitzi D.
Hey y'all, I'm Mitzi Dawn, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Mitzi Dawn.
Family. This is exciting, I'm pulling up my little note. I actually read some stuff last night, which I never do. And now I'm excited that I did, because when I walked in, I saw one microphone, and I was under the impression I was talking for 15 minutes. So welcome. It's gonna be great. I'll start off with saying that my clean date is October 22nd, 2008. Yeah. And when this topic came up, I was a little bit nervous about it because when I think of dreams, I think of like the dream that I had since I was a child, which was I was going to be a famous country music singing star, right? And that was my dream ever since I can remember. Like I heard the Judds on the radio when I was a little girl, and I used to sing along, and I would watch TV and watch CMT and MTV, you know, just watch all of these stations, and I would watch them and I would think, like, that's exactly what I want to be. But it's important to know a little bit about what else was going on in my house during that time when I was watching these shows, right? So, definitely a child of trauma. Grandma was trauma. She gave it to my mama. My mama gave it right to me and my sister. From a really, really young age, I was not safe. I was hungry. I was not cared for. I was not looked after. And there were just basic needs, right? Like, so my mom was an alcoholic and then graduated into distribution, and it was a lot. Like, it was right. She felt proud because she said I was always honest with y'all because everything was out, right? It's backwards thinking. So she didn't keep it from us. There's a picture of me when I was 7 years old that I remember. And I'm sitting on, and there's a glass table, and I'm sitting there and I'm eating a bowl of cereal. And all I have on is a pair of underwear, but I'm eight, so I probably should have more clothes on than that. And I'm eating cereal at the table, but if you look closer, you can see right to my left, there's drugs. Little, you know, little lines on the table, just right there on the table where I'm eating cereal. And on the TV, there was pornography. Yeah. And I just had no idea. I was just sitting there eating cereal. So I say that because it's important, I think, to talk about. But also, when you think about a little girl having a dream, of course I'm going to have a dream that I want to be a famous country music star, right? Because then everybody would have to love me. They would have to pay attention. When I walked in a room, I had something that they wanted, and so I would be important enough to pay attention to. I also like the idea of being able to buy things, because growing up makes me so mad even to this day when I think about a little girl when I would go to school in California. If you didn't have lunch money, it was like prison. They would feed you buttered bread and water. Right. Now, y'all, I'm 48, so, but still, but like, you know, that's what they didn't just give you a regular, so everybody in the class knew that you didn't have money and you know, it was like a whole thing. So, growing up, knowing that, like, you wake up in the morning, and anybody that's ever been around methamphetamine, there's not food there in the house. And trying to find a damn matching pair of socks, yeah, that was like a whole other thing. And then I would go to school and then kind of be punished there. And so the beautiful part about God is that He always put people in my life that would take care of, you know, that would love me and take care of me. So people would figure out, like, okay, she's not being cared for, and they would come pick me up and take me to Disneyland. Or, you know, I always wanted a horse, so I started walking down the street to this farm, and I would clean people's stalls, and they would let me ride their horses. But then I came so much that, you know, it became like a thing where I could always go, and I always had people that would take me to lunch and that would hang out with me. So I had examples of what love would do, and I had examples of what families were like, but it was very strange for me because I would go to a friend's house, I'll never forget it, and I'd spend the night. When I woke up, her mom was awake and she was making us breakfast. And I was like, this is like TV. Like, she's so lucky. She was being mean to her mom. Like, are you crazy? Like, talking back, like, I can't believe, like, she just made it. Like, this is crazy. So, in my little head, my dad was a musician, and I had his record. This is a funny thing. My dad, on the cover of his record, it was called Silver Wolf, and he had big curly hair. And he was wearing silver moon boots, and he had, you know, like the big V. I thought my dad was in Kiss. Seriously, yeah. And so in my head, my dad was famous, my mom's nuts, but when my dad finds out what's happening here, he's gonna come get me. And when he does, everyone's gonna be sorry, because we're gonna tour, and we're gonna sing, and we're gonna eat breakfast, and we're going to do all of the things, you know, it's going to be exciting. So fast forward, and mom gets arrested, and I get to go to some sort of holding center for kids. Back then, the way that they dealt with that was they put kids that were taken from their families because their parents did drugs in with the same place that they put the bad kids that were doing drugs, right? So it was really scary. We were all thrown into the same little house. And they called my dad, who had been absent, and said, your daughter's in state's custody. You need to come pick her up. Your ex is in prison. And so my dad had just got married to a 20-year-old woman in Connecticut. And I believe that she thought that he was in Kiss as well. Because she met him when he was playing in bars, and she thought, well, this is going to be a great life. I'm going to get to party at night with him, and I'm going to, you know, have a house. It's going to be this whole thing. And on their honeymoon, they had to drive to California and pick up this kid. So you can imagine, she was not happy. So mom went to prison, and I went to New Jersey. And when I got there, it was more of the same. My dad was an alcoholic. She was angry that I was there, and it was just, he slept all day, worked all night. He would like throw lunch money at me. You know, it was just like not a good situation. Again, I have to mention God bringing me this beautiful family in the eighth grade. It's gonna sound so crazy. I got a boyfriend. His name is Matt Hirschman. And I started going over to his house, and his parents made me do homework, which nobody had ever made me do. So I went from being like almost failing to straight A's immediately. You know, all we needed was a little like, hey, I love you, you're worthy, let's do this. They gave me chores, they took me on family vacations. At Christmas time, I had just as many presents as all the other kids. And I'll tell you, just last week, I had to go to New Jersey for work, and I went and stayed with the Hirschmans. Yeah, they're still my family today. So God brought me people, always. But the whole point is that my whole life was like, somebody's going to love me. Like, this is, I just wanted that so much. I want to be loved, and I want security, and I want people to know who I am, and I want to walk in the room, and I want to feel like I'm somebody. I want people to recognize me and say, oh, hey, look, that's Mitzi Dawn, and I wanted that so much. So I decided probably the best way to do that would be if I became famous. So I start writing songs, and they start getting a little notice. I immediately moved to Nashville. And I did really well, y'all. Like, when I got here, I was here for about 3 months, and I got a publishing deal, and I was writing for Tim McGraw. So that little girl, that little girl that, like, dreamt of these things, right? I get into town, and they're like, yeah, this is really good. And I'm suddenly, like, around the people that I used to watch on TV. If I kick this microphone, what, is she texting you? No, okay. I'm a musician. I'm over here like, playing badminton. So I get to do all of these things that I dream to do. I walk, I come to Nashville, and I'm like, go into an office, and I see the people that I saw on TV. And I get to sit down in a room, and I get to write songs with them. And I get to go to, you know, award events and do all these things that I dreamt of doing my whole life. And that's when the addiction, I know, really started because, oh, by the way, this whole time I'm not using or drinking because I saw what happened to Mom and Dad and I was like, not going to do that. So my first drug was the word yes. Like, how can I get you to do what I need you to do? Who do I need to be to get you to love me? So I'm in town. I'm like, I obviously don't have that gene because I haven't had a problem, and I just started for no reason. It was like a Tuesday night, and there was a plate of stuff going around, and I normally just pass it and say no thank you, and for no reason at all, I decided to do it. And it's the weirdest thing. Like, people always talk about, they're like, oh, the first time that I used, like, I'll never forget it, and the way that it made. He didn't even really care about it. I'll tell you what he cared about was there was a boy. And he sparkled, right? And when he walked in the room, he was also in the music industry, and he was kind of like further along than me. He was famous, and I thought, I realized all these other dreams, and it wasn't enough. That hole still wasn't there. And so then I was like, well, that's what I need. If I could make him love me, well, then everybody would definitely have to pay attention. They would know. If he loved me, then that meant that I was lovable. So I start doing all the things that I need to become and the person I need to become so that he would notice. And he did. And we started dating, and like I said, on a Tuesday night, there's a plate of stuff going around. And I did it, and I didn't really care about it. It didn't do anything great to me, but what it did when he did the drug was, after he would do that drug, he would tell me, you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. And I could never imagine living life without you. And we're going to be together forever. And so that was my drug, right? So it started off where I would go and want to use this particular substance with him so that I could start hearing and having all of these things that I was actually after. And then quickly that progressed to, I am in my apartment and I've locked the door and I'm telling him that he can't come in because I have a stomach ache. And I'm embarrassed because I look bad, and I would rather just have him not see me tonight because I want to be alone with that drug. So that was my quick, fast using. I came into the rooms of recovery and lost the boyfriend immediately. Weird. But I thought maybe I overreacted, and so I went back out, and upon further investigation, I did not overreact. I am an addict. From the time that I came back, I relapsed and came back in exactly 1 year later. See, when I was in the rooms the first time, I hadn't lost anything. I just would promise myself I wouldn't use, and then I would use, and I thought maybe that was a problem. So I came into the rooms the second time, and I lost my kids, I lost my apartment, I lost my publishing deal, no more Tim McGraw, my car, all of it was all gone. So 1 year later, That's, I guess, what I needed. But I always tell that because when you come in the first time and you hear people say, I lost my kids, and you go, I didn't do that yet. I didn't do it yet. So I keep thinking I need these things because I want to feel loved and I want to feel these things. When I come into the rooms a second time, that's when it all starts clicking. I get Holly P as my sponsor. And she is fancy, y'all. I don't know if y'all know Holly, but she, when if y'all saw Holly, you would be like, what this bitch do? She sold too much Tupperware? Like, she looked like a banker's wife. Like, she looked like someone, right? And I just thought she was a man. When she spoke, everybody paid attention. And she was just, and then I went and listened to her share her story, and she was talking about being arrested for trafficking and heroin. And I was like, what? Like, if she can become this lady, this woman that, like, is a business owner, and she, you know, that's what I want. So I asked her to sponsor me. She worked really hard with me. A sponsor is a guide through the 12 steps. Holly was a guide through the 12 steps, and she was so much more. She knew what I needed. Holly's known for getting after people, yelling at them, or, you know, if you do something wrong, she'll let you, hey, blah, 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 you know, let you know. She never was like that with me. She knew I needed encouragement and love and support, and she would do things like help me with my hair or dress me for job interviews and teach me how, because I was this lunatic songwriter. I wanted to show up to a job interview, you know, with a Nikki Sixx bandana on or something. So she taught me how to be a woman, right? So my dream was, I wanted to be a songwriter, I wanted to be a singer, I wanted to be someone that was deserving of your time and attention and love. And one day, Holly was talking with me about why, I'll say this real quick. I called out a step work uninspired, like twice, where we'd made an appointment to go over a step. And she was like, and I was like, I'm not really feeling it today. And she was like, yeah, so people don't live that way. Because as a songwriter, you can just say, I'm not feeling it, and then you don't go to work to them. You just don't, because nobody wants to sit in a room with you if you're not feeling it. So I told her what I'm feeling, and she was like, you know what you need to do? You need to get you a little job. And I was like, I just went to the CMA Awards. Like, I have a job. And she made me go down to Cumberland Heights and be a clinical associate. Because she wanted me to know what it felt like to have to show up somewhere and to have to be there. And something happened when I started doing that. I started thriving. I had to get dressed every day. And there were people that needed me to, my boss, these people were patient. You just wouldn't even believe it. I showed up a couple times at 8, which was the time. And then I noticed that where I got there, like, I didn't really have a lot to do, so I just started rolling in around 9:30. Normally people would fire you for that, and my boss pulls me aside. She's like, Mitzi, the time of arrival is not like a speed limit on a curve. It is not a suggestion. That was Bobby Joe, the lady I introduced you to. So this is not a suggestion. This is like, I was like, Bobby Joe, I am saving you money. I literally get here and I do nothing for an hour and a half. She was like, I thought she was gonna explode. She got real. You know what happens when you get there at 8 o'clock? And I was like, no, what? She said, the people that have been here since freaking midnight can leave. I was like, oh. Okay, so y'all have a method to this, okay. So they didn't fire me, right? They taught me how to be a woman. They taught me how to be a woman that shows up to work at 8 o'clock. And I thrived, okay? Let me look at my time. All right. I did well. So I started getting these opportunities to move up in the treatment industry, because I did really well, and I was I was used, so I could talk with addicts, and I could, and I was doing well. And I was wanting to not do them because I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to be, like, this is my dream, right? And she said, baby, you got to get off the results committee. Mm-hmm. That's what I said. I was like, but this has been the thing. She was like, I want you to figure out, what is your purpose? Like, what is the reason that you want that dream? And then we're going to figure it out. And so I started writing it down, and it's all the things I talked about. Like, I wanted to feel loved, and I wanted stability. I wanted financial security. I wanted to know when money was coming and leaving. I wanted to feel like I was a part of something that somebody couldn't take away from me. Isn't that amazing? That's exactly what we have here. That's exactly what we have. So when I was thinking about it, I don't want to talk about lost dreams awakened, because my dreams have always been awakened and they're not here yet. They are here. They're here. I can't tell you that my life would be any different if I was a country. Like, we bought a house. Like, we bought a house. Like, that's crazy. We bought a house. I have a car. I have insurance. I have food. My house is beautiful. I think the only thing that would be different about my house if I was famous is it would be cleaner. I'm still working on that part. I'm super messy. I don't know what's wrong with me. Apparently, I just take things off when I'm changing and throw them as far as I can in opposite directions, and I get mad when I can't find it the next day. But this is a work in progress, right? If I have a home, I have, when I walked in today in Alabama after we drove to an Airbnb, yeah, I travel. I get to go with my work, I travel. I get to go and stay in different cities and meet different people. And then today, when I walked in, as soon as we got here, before we even got in the door, we had, hey, Mincy Coley, and people were hugging us. Like, they knew who we were, and they loved us. So, I think that when we get clean, lost dreams do awaken, but I think it's important to be able to recognize them. And when we are, and again, when we get clean, we don't promise cars and houses and fiancés with muscles, show muscles, right? We don't promise those things. But what it does is it creates a situation where we're present and we are aware and we're participating in our life, so we can recognize these things. Because there's so many things where I would have just been like, no, you know, this is... If I would have held on to that idea of being that person, I could still be her, and I'd be making $2,000 a month, and I would be, that's what the draw is, because you hope that somebody's going to record your song and it's going to be a hit. And I would be hearing no 86 times a day, and it's a hard business. And I'm not saying that it's, some people, that's all they want to do, and that's fine, but for me, I can do this job, and then I can bring my guitar to treatment centers, and I can write songs with recovering addicts, right? So when I was being paid to be a songwriter or go to sit in a room with an artist, and they would talk to me, and I would write down what they were saying, and I would create a song. And when I started working in treatment, I was like, these guys have way better stuff. You know, you're sitting in the room with an addict. I'll never forget when I was in the room with an artist one time, and it was right around, like, I think the Gulf War or something, and they were like, I don't know if it was this beautiful song, it was almost done, we need a bridge, like, we need to put something about an American flag in here. And I'm like, what? You know, like, they're always aiming for radio and always aiming for, you know, something. It would have been appropriate if it was about that, but it was not. It was about something else, and then all of a sudden we're bringing soldiers and flags and dirt trucks and all these things. And And when I write with y'all, I get vulnerability, and I get honesty, and I get things that I would never think of, right, on my own. So I don't really have to think very much. I just have to make what you say rhyme. So I get to still do that. I get to write songs, and I get to sing, and I get to participate in that art part of my brain. But I also get to have a house and get dressed every day and show up somewhere, and I get to participate in life in a way that that I think I dreamed about participating. It just looked a little different in my little in my mind. It says here, there's no model of the recovering addict. When the drugs go and the addict works the program, wonderful things happen. Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. Our willingness to grow spiritually keeps us buoyant. I thought buoyant was the weirdest word to use there. And it's, apparently it's not. They know better than me. Just like Bobby Joe at Cumberland. Buoyant is like you feel cheerful and behave in a lively way, or you're able to stay afloat and rise to the top. Yeah. When we take the actions indicated in the steps, the results are a change in our personality. It is our action that is important. We leave the results to our higher power. And I think that that's what Holly was teaching me when she said, get off the results committee. Hold in your heart, she was saying, like, just hold in your heart where you want to be, and then don't tell God how you're going to get there, because you're living in Him. So just allow the universe, allow your higher power to do what you need. And I'm so grateful that I did that. My life today, it's beautiful. It really is. A few years ago, I was, you know, we go up and down, up and down. But I'm telling you that by remaining clean and trying to stay in the solution, sometimes I can't be in the solution. I just have to hang in there for the next 5 minutes at a time, right? But doing that and seeing where I am today, even just as opposed to where I was 7 months ago, it's just I'm just constantly amazed and grateful. Yeah, and I think that's all I have. Thank you. Thank you. Do we have time? Do you want them to ask questions? What do we do?
Sure.
Oh.